Thursday, July 15th, the day of the big speech. President was in good spirits and completely relaxed during the day. We got into quite a little discussion on plans for the speech. He's not going to release an advance text, and we didn't inform anybody, including Ziegler or anyone else, of what the content of the speech was going to be until we got to the TV studio, when Henry told him before he started his calls to the Russian and Indian ambassadors. We also took Scali up at Ron's strong suggestion. It was felt that in making the arrangements, we needed to be sure that we got the point across of the president's initiative on this. And we talked about the problems of handling right-wing congressmen and the reaction that they were going to have. Ron was concerned that the basic interpretation would set in tonight and that Kissinger therefore should do a backgrounder, but the president refused to let him do that. The president also decided he wanted to walk on to the camera rather than be standing behind the podium when the thing started. We set up all our phone call process, and we're ready to cover everybody. We got into some of the problems. Rogers pointed out that we're going to appear to be letting our friends down, and they'll object. And also the liberals on the other side will make the tricky dick claim and will complain that there was no consultation with Congress and do everything they can to scuttle it. So we have a delicate path to tread right down the middle. Rogers, in a meeting with Henry and me, urged therefore that we have to make clear what we didn't do, that no agreements were reached. We have no secret deals, no promises, no concessions. We have to reassure them of that and assure Congress that we will cooperate with them in making the plans. Bill's concerned because he'll be called to testify and wants to be able to cover this. He thinks that we should not use Henry's idea of saying that because of the delicacy of the situation, we will have no comment, because we are changing our basic policy and we need to reassure our Pacific allies that we are not changing our policy regarding them, that we don't deal with our friends behind their backs, etc. The president made the point with Henry and me that the libs will try to knock this down as an election year gimmick, and that we've got to point that this is, that we have consulted with Congress, that we are consistent in our policy, and if they jump on us, we've got to say that they've unmasked themselves, because they're not against what we're doing. They're against the fact that we are the ones that are doing it. We, President then, as he's always done on every speech, read the final draft to me. Then a little later he called Henry in and again read it to him. He seems to be quite satisfied that it's the way he wants it. So we headed on up by helicopter to Burbank, where we originated at the NBC studio. Speech went well. Afterwards, on arrival at Burbank, there was quite a large crowd outside the parking lot with a surprisingly enthusiastic reception for the president, which, of course, pleased him greatly. We then afterwards drove over to Perino's for dinner. President Ehrlichman, Kissinger, Scali, Ziegler, and me had a delicious dinner. President thoroughly enjoyed himself. We went through a lot of the background discussion on how it had come about, Henry telling some of his stories, which we'd already covered in some detail. The main highlight of the evening for the president was a long lecture on wine selection that he gave to Scali. as he ordered up a magnum of Lafitte Rothschild 1961, which turned out to cost $250. In the middle of preparation this afternoon for the speech and all that he had on his mind, the president called me from his house to say he'd been reading the San Diego paper and saw all the discussion about the convention site and felt that we were missing a bet by not making a big thing out of the announcement of the San Diego selection and thought we should do something about that. The other big thing this afternoon was a call I had from Conley, who was furious because he had been told that we had hired a new treasurer of the U.S. and that this had been done without consulting him, that he'd called Mo Marumoto to check it out, and Mo confirmed that we had hired this Mexican woman. And this had Conley extremely upset, and he said that he, as a result of this and other things, was going to check out, in other words, resign. He wanted to talk to me about it and let it, we'd work out when and on what basis, but that he was fed up with this whole thing. I called him later from the studio to try and simmer the thing down after I'd checked it out and gave him the story on what had happened there, but he didn't buy it. He said that he just wasn't going to tolerate this kind of thing, that obviously it's forecasting what's to come, that these things build up and he can see it coming, that at his press conference this morning, a reporter said to him that the word he had word from the White House that Conley was forced to have the press conference, and went into the point that he was not a peon and was not going to function as a slave to the White House staff, and that he knows when he's got a problem when Rogers is out here knifing him with the president, referring to him as a gunboat diplomat, etc. There wasn't much I could do about it today, so and I did not tell the president and told Conley I was not going to until tomorrow. Call me at home after midnight to make the point that we'll have a delicate problem with Rogers tomorrow regarding Kissinger doing the briefing. He wanted me in notifying Rogers of it to emphasize the shift to the president, shift to the focus to the president, as Kissinger did with the SALT briefings. So on. So once again, I get to do the dirty work. July 15th.